Tap, tap, check, check. Okay, let's get started. This is Andrew Lewis. Welcome to The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts. Since this is live radio, and since it's actually being recorded, I don't know where or even where you are. But we're here together in a strange way, right now. As for me, I'm somewhere in the first quarter lap of the 21st century, in California, in a small studio in Santa Rosa, staring out at a closed door. I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, absolutely anything could walk through that door, and I just have to be here and be ready to receive it, whenever it is. If you want some bio info, let's just say that I'm beyond the midpoint, perhaps way beyond. Though there's no way of really telling, right? Most of my life might be somewhere behind me. And there's the recognition that I can't possibly remember all the things that have happened in the intervening years. Beside me right now on the table, I have a phone filled with messages. Messages I can't remember sending to people whom I no longer know. Some people I don't even remember knowing. And elsewhere, there's a place where the apostles and the eagle and the oxen and the lion and the lamb, they wait, eternally awake, eternally expectant in a darkened chapel. John Brockley and his wife, Marcia, they used to take care of his 99-year-old mother and his older brother who was incapacitated. But they're gone now. All the same, Marcia and John are still distracted by the demands of infirm parents and aging homes. Sometimes they go to Los Angeles, maybe once a month, to clean the house of Marcia's parents. John takes care of the property of a well-known architect. Marcia teaches Pilates. As for their own work, maybe next month, or perhaps the month after. But it wasn't always that way. We once felt an expansive future ahead of us because, in fact, there was one. And as for the stories I wanted to tell, it seems they were always, always just on the verge of their telling. With that, I'd like to welcome you to The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts.
You home, there goes the best war we've ever had. Now that nobody's all alone, we'll turn forgiveness to forget. If you're in town, you'll look me up, we'll dance the days into the cups, and you will talk of golden rivers flowing, giving you enough. Have cut the mold and filled the stadium. If in as many years I call you from the middle of it all, will you forgive me or forget that we were ever born at all?
This is Andrew Lewis, and you are listening to KOWS OS 92.5. And welcome to the inaugural episode of The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts. So what's this all about? I'm basically going to tell you a big, long story that's going to spin out over the next couple of months, or perhaps even couple of years, we'll see. I'm going to tell this story sequentially, which means that all the episodes are kind of going to build on one another. If you missed something, you can go back and listen to the recordings on my KOWS stack, or you can go to my Mountain Substack. Just Google The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts, and you'll find it. This is also a bit of a high wire act. Although I've recorded these stories before for Spotify, this is my very first time to tell them live, so it's a bit of a switch up for me. And so I'm going to ask for your patience as I futz about through the technical stuff, and hopefully we'll appreciate any missteps that occur. Beyond that, a lot actually depends on you. Some of you listening right now might be young yet, and given the stuff that's going on in the news, even as early as this morning, you might be scared, wondering what the future will hold. You might be wondering, is it going to be good or supremely ungood? And if it's the latter, how will you get along or even survive? Or you might be wondering, what's the meaning of your life, or of any life? What is that thing that you might call your purpose? Or perhaps it's just a Friday afternoon and you're pounding nails or working in the yard and you just want some company for a while. Perhaps from someone who might echo your own thoughts, or maybe you're at that point where you're putting your own parents to rest and realizing that you yourself are the last vestige of their presence in this world. Or perhaps you're older, your singular life has been fully lived, and you're wondering, what was all that for? If you're any of that, or even if you're not, I'm going to ask you to just take a minute and stop for a bit, because I have a story I want to tell, and I'm going to ask you to listen. And I'm going to caution you, big caution, this might take a bit of time, so you might just have to get comfortable and settle in for a while. We just have to trust that we have sufficient time. Some of you might want to consider it a bedtime story, something to lull you to sleep. Here's how it's going to roll. I'm going to tell you about something that happened. It's about a walk, but it's also about some paintings and statues, and a little bit about God, and a lot about life, and about a whole bunch of stuff that went down a long, long time ago. I'm also going to play some tunes that I think you might like. They're cool tunes, or at least I think so. And it will also give you a bit of a break from my voice. So there you have it. I look forward to getting to know you. Let's go.
It's a form LA. And we're alone for the first time on Venice Beach under palm trees. Tell me your dreams and I'll tell you mine. What would you say if I told you you're my last thought at the end of each night? Would you believe me? Or would you even reply? This world I live in, I know I can't change, but for you I'd compromise. I'd be on your side if you'd be on mine. Yes, you're anxious and you're stubborn too, but I'd learn to love the worst parts of you. Could be the former or the cheap wine, but I'm hoping that you'll reply. Would you? Feels like I've known you since before this life. I hope I always see you this way. Here's to wondering if you feel the same, but I can tell your eyes meet mine that the truth is in your reply.
This is Andrew Lewis on KOWS 92.5. Sonoma County's premier music festival is just around the corner. Mark your calendars for Sunday, September 28th for the Railroad Square Music Festival, a free celebration held from noon to 7 p.m. in downtown Santa Rosa. Multiple stages featuring local musicians and DJs delivering everything from folk and rock to electronic and hip-hop. KOWS Community Radio will be present, and we hope you'll swing by and say hi to your favorite hosts. We'll have swag, schedules, and some information about how you can get involved. Remember this date, Sunday, September 28th. Visit railroadsquaremusicfestival.com for more information about sponsors and the lineup for the multiple stages. And welcome back to the inaugural episode of The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts. I'd like to tell you about a mountain. And I want to tell you how once a long time ago I walked to that place. It's a story about that time or that place in one's life that's the genesis for nearly all things. I want to tell you how one night when I was in my 20s, in what by one measure was the 1,993rd year of our Lord, I walked out the back door of our flat in the neighborhood of Golden Hills in the city of San Diego, and I walked down a flight of steps flecked in gray, peeling paint, and I headed into the darkness toward a mountain that I knew rose somewhere in the distance. The thing is, there's nothing really to tell. It was just a walk, like any walk that any one of us might take on any one of the days of our brief lives. It didn't require any great physical feat. It wasn't Alex Honnold hanging by the ridges of his fingerprints as he sought traction upon the glass-like granite surface of the free rider pitch on his epic free solo of El Capitan. It wasn't Ricky Gates running across the breadth of America. And it wasn't Maya Gabera shooting straight down toward the rocks of Praia del Norte as a 70-foot-high mountain of roaring dark water collapsed upon her body and threatened to tear her from her mortal coil. Compared to that stuff, my walk, it doesn't deserve anything. Not even an exhalation of breath, except for perhaps one thing, and that's this, that it happened. And perhaps anything, perhaps just by the virtue of it happening, perhaps that in itself qualifies as epic. And maybe for that reason, it deserves to be told, at least once. And if it's going to be once, then best to tell the thing in its entirety. Because, and here's the other thing, if I'm going to tell you about the walk to the mountain, I have to tell you first about A Street. But you can't understand A Street unless you also know about Keith. And you can't know about Keith, you can't understand him or know his poor dead soul unless you also know about John Broccoli. And about the apostles, and the dominion of beasts, and about the tetramorph, and the rock, and the cathedral. And then you have to know about Jean-Baptiste, and about the journey he took, and about the adoration, about the Orleans Hotel, and the wedding, and its preparations, about Thomas and his doubts, about Autumn and her dissipation, and Eddington's number, and the counting of the stars. You have to know about the bitter night in the cradle. You need to understand the monstrance and the chalice, and the desert fathers, and the excoriation of Bartholomew in the first century. You have to know about Junipero, and Laura Arroyo, and about Bluma's death, about the liturgy of St. John Coltrane, and about Eleche and the Coke machine, and about the horrors that are at times visited upon men. You have to know all of these things, every one, each and every one, if you are to really understand what it meant for me to go to the mountain. Thank you.
people expect you to fall, hit that same old wall. Really, they don't want to help at all. They talk behind your back today, shake their heads and say, well, I always knew that the ball would come to no good anyway. You better pack up and go, Detroit or Buffalo. Anybody want to know where you don't know? You don't know. God knows everybody gotta go sometime. And I'm taking this train to the end of the line. Missing every mile that friend of mine. I haven't been too well myself. Time on the shelf, saying that I don't need help when I do. But I'm gonna be just fine. A lot of friends, a little while. Still, I wish I could see you again sometime. But I better pack up and go. Detroit or Buffalo. Anybody. Sometime. And I'm taking this train to the end of the line. Missing every mile, that friend of mine. Hard to open up the door, like you've done so many times before. Sometimes you think you just can't do it anymore. Take a chance and take a train out into the pouring rain. And all you got's your suitcase for the plane. Missing every mile, that friend of
Andrew Lewis, and you are listening to KOWS 92.5. It's all about free speech and no bull. I'll make you a bet. Go to San Diego. Go to the ash concrete pavement of the Mission Beach boardwalk. Find some man perched on the low parapet, some sunburned fellow. Maybe he's drinking a beer. And tell him that you know someone. Tell him that this person once left his house in San Diego and he walked all the way to the mountain. $10 right now that the dude sitting on the wall will say, "What mountain?" As in, "I don't think I've ever seen a mountain." And that's the thing. Why should he have? The bottom reaches of California have been so carpeted over with concrete and condos and shopping mall disasters that you might not even know that there was any topography at all. And besides, in San Diego, attention pretty much turns inevitably toward the ocean, toward the setting sun, toward that place to which you're going, toward the imagined future that has not yet come to be. So there, on the edge of the continent, you've arrived at the terminus. Why would you ever really look back toward that place from whence you've come? The mountain, this particular mountain, had a name, Mount San Miguel. But at the time, I don't think I knew it was called anything at all. On most days, obscured by some haze or fog, you might not even notice it. And it wouldn't warrant a trip, or an ascent, or the slightest attention. Rising in the east, it's not really one of San Diego's iconic spots, all those places that tourists are drawn to. The zoo, Gaslamp Quarter, SeaWorld, La Jolla, the Hotel Del, where the divorcee Wallace Simpson supposedly met Prince Edward. By the way, that's not actually true. Regardless, it ain't none of that. Instead, the mountain is the background noise of San Diego. But here's the crazy thing. It is. The mountain exists. If you Google images of the San Diego skyline, scroll down and eventually you'll see it, looming like some hulking beast of a dragon, rising above the cool glass and steel towers of the downtown and the sheening waters of the bay. But despite its scale, the wild thing is that if you live in San Diego, you never really notice it. And I wouldn't have if it hadn't been for the apartment on A Street. And so I guess that's where all this should begin.
pick at my wounds until they bleed.
Picture 1989. For a good number of you, you'll just have to imagine it, because you might not even have been born yet. For those of you who don't know, that was the year the Berlin Wall fell, the year of the Velvet Revolution, the year before the Singing Revolution in the Baltics. Empires were just falling, and a lot of us, we felt hopeful. The Cold War was ending. My wife, she was my girlfriend at the time, and I had been living in Seattle. We were 24, and in the autumn of that year, we loaded a U-Haul with the few things we had, and we drove the length of the coast back to San Diego. We'd been dating for a year. We needed a place to stay, a place to make home. We were also broke. We'd actually grown up in San Diego, and as teenagers, we'd circuited in that crescent of neighborhoods that ring the downtown. Mission Hills, Hillcrest, North Park, Bankers Hill. But now on our own, in our 20s, we couldn't afford to live in any of those places. So we headed to the knoll of Golden Hill that sloped up from downtown to the east. The neighborhood was filled with dilapidated Victorians and turn-of-the-century craftsman houses. And despite the weathered wood, the shedding paint, the weed-filled yards, and the abundance of chain link, the bones were good. You could see how it once had been a gracious place. But the graced years were before Lindbergh Field arrived. The San Diego airport had been built on dredge-fill in 1928 on the edges of the bay, close to the fledgling aeronautic companies that would later blossom during World War II. And I guess because of the prevailing winds, planes would come in and land from the east. Golden Hill was dead center on the flight path. As plane technology advanced, the propeller thrum was replaced by the scream of jet engines. As the years went on, the noise would become deafening. Overhead, every 7 to 10 minutes, the air would fill with the sound of the screaming legions from hell. It didn't do much for property values. But if you could take the noise, it was a good place to be. Back then, things were all done through newspaper ads. So each morning, we'd sit down and look through the paper for listings. One day, we made an appointment to go see 2667 A Street. It was a white clapboard house, probably built in the 20s. In the late 40s, all the GIs had been returning home, and there was a shortage of housing. So the owner at the time must have added a one-bedroom granny flat on top. It was accessed through a steep flight of stairs tacked onto the side, and another flight tacked onto the front. But that had been long before, in the year we arrived. The owner was this young, quiet, tall, bearded man. He didn't seem quite comfortable in his own skin. His name was Keith, and he lived in the downstairs unit. He took us upstairs, and he just stood back as we walked around. Picture this. The rooms were arranged in a circle. The living room opened into a dining room that opened into a corner bedroom that, if you turn left, opened into a small kitchen, and if you turn left again, into a hall that led back into the dining room. Living room windows looked out toward downtown, kitchen windows to the east, bedroom windows faced south so that all day long the apartment caught the beautiful light as the sun cycled from east to west. A deck opened out of the bedroom. From there we could look out at a Canary Island date palm and the yellow dead grass in the yard. It was more beautiful than any place we had ever lived. Keith didn't really ask us any questions. When we said we wanted to live there, he just said yes. We filled out an application, but I don't think he even read it. This is Andrew Lewis, and you are listening to The Mountain on KOWS 92.5, Occidental, California. So, we lived in that small apartment for only 3 years, a time that we would forever after refer to as A Street. And since then, nearly an entire life has been lived. And yet those 3 years amounted to perhaps the happiest time in our entire lives. How can that be? To be in your 20s, you're shedding the skin of your childhood, and you have the whole rest of your life before you. The moment, it feels like pure possibility, as if everything could be and nothing at all would be denied. And so it was there, in this moment, that we set to learning how to make a home. At that time, if you lived in Golden Hills, it meant something in particular. It meant that you didn't have much money, and that you were kind of, sort of, willing to live on the edge. It was back in the time before real estate agents and marketing professionals had rebranded the neighborhood South Park in an effort to distance the blocks from the reputation as a neighborhood in transition. But when we were there, it was definitely in transition. But from what and to what wasn't really clear. Back in the day, when the real estate speculator Alonzo Horton had envisioned a development south of the squalid hovel of the old San Diego Pueblo, he had christened it New San Diego. Trolleys ran up the western slope to a new housing development studded with large Victorian, Edwardian, and eventually craftsman manses. It was pretty stately, with views of the bay and beyond the Coronado Islands. But then the war came, and with it, the Kaiser shipyards to the south and National City. The working class population overflowed from the Bayside Flats and into Logan. And after the war, braceros and the immigrant population moved in. Folks fled to Point Loma and newer neighborhoods in Claremont, Mission Bay, and La Mesa. In the 80s, that great housing stock stood dilapidated, and we became part of a new wave of pioneers settling in. Artists, young couples, and progressive families who couldn't afford Mission Hills and Hillcrest took a place and began to renovate them. In the early 90s, it was still a place where pretty much anything could go. A pop-up neighborhood circus performed above the Florida Canyon Park. The Whistling Man, a gray, dreaded fellow with caramel skin and mirrored sunglasses, would walk the streets always in motion. And when in motion, he would always be whistling. But not just whistling. He whistled Sun Ra and Coltrane. And not just Coltrane, but late Coltrane. Polyphonic and atonal and discordant, with more notes in a wider range than one might imagine could possibly be crammed into a single breath. You would hear him at dawn, and then you would hear him as you fell asleep into the arms of the night. And then there was the whip lady, who after the bars closed would wander the streets and alleys cracking her black whip. How we knew she was a lady, I don't know, because I don't recall ever seeing her, just being awoken by the snap of her whip in the middle of the night. Our upstairs post-war apartment wasn't luxurious, but it had a feeling of safety, of opportunity, of something incipient just about to happen. The quality in those three rooms was magical and fleeting. Perched up like a treehouse, no matter the time of day, light would flood in from the west or south or east and work through apertures to fill each room with a honey-colored glow. The kitchen was the size of a button, with a minuscule 1940s Summit stove that could have fit in the back of a Mini Cooper. One year, we turned out a Thanksgiving dinner for 12 on that 18-inch stovetop. That small oven would one day render some of the food for our wedding. The days would be punctuated by the ringing bells of the paleta vendors pushing their handcarts of colorful frozen treats up and down the hot, dry streets. Our cordless landline would pick up interference from a ham radio operator across the street. You'd be talking to a customer service rep or a friend or your boss, and then you'd hear the crackle and the groan as he spit profanities and vile into his mic, and the crackling words would overlay our phone conversations. We ID'd the house from the big antenna. Across the street, a pack of feral kids lived within. One night, they came to our house, and they walked tentatively up the stairs and knocked on our door. The parents were gone, somewhere gone, and the kids, they were scared, and they told us. We accompanied them back home and found the furniture all overturned and broken. We invited them back, and together we baked a cake and we played cards until the lights came back on across the street, and we took them and the cake back to their home and their next waiting disaster. In the backyard, I turned over the yellow grass with a digging fork and a flat-headed spade, and I planted a garden. I hauled carloads of seaweed from the beach and chopped it up with a shovel and dug it into the ground. In 2 years, the string beans towered over my head. We adopted a stray kitty, the first cat we had ever had. We bought freshly hatched ducks. They arrived in a box in the mail, and immediately we gave them water with an eyedropper, and their inert forms came to life. They took their first swim in our bathtub. Later, we kept them in the yard in a kiddie pool until a possum took them out one by one, until only one was left crying in the darkness, so that Anna and I would take shifts all night, sleeping in the yard on the ground beside her to help her feel calm and safe. I summoned the courage to take writing classes. I had visions of the inkling of a book that I would never write. I edited a crappy fitness club newsletter in the garage of an antique dealer. We'd get drunk with our friends, and we went to parties in the bars and warehouses to the east of downtown. And if it wasn't for that apartment, and if it wasn't for that life, and if it wasn't for the sense of possibility of a beyond, beyond the beyond, I perhaps would have never thought about the mountain. But in the kitchen of that apartment, the door that opened up on the outdoor stairs and landing had an 18-inch by 18-inch window. And on a clear day, from our elevation, framed perfectly in that aperture, Mount San Miguel rose like a dusty camel-colored Mount Fuji in the distance. Each dawn, the sun would begin its march along the ecliptic in the vicinity of the mountain and trace its way across the sky until it bedded itself in the west beyond the towers of downtown. And nearly every morning, I sat at our pine table, painted Pepto-Bismol pink and ringed with blue salamanders. In that tiny room, I would drink my coffee. I would read. I would sometimes write. and I would gaze at that form on the horizon. It didn't take long for the thought to enter my mind. One day, I thought, I am going to walk to that mountain.
Thanks Molesbury Market for their underwriting support. Established in 1959, they are family-owned, located in the old Redwood Highway in the Larkfield Center. Their website, molesburymarket.com. Molesbury Market tunes into the roots of rock every Sunday morning at 7 on Cowes Community Radio.
Cowes is underwritten in part by the Occidental Community Council. The council strives to meet the unmet needs of the Occidental area, and the public is invited to its meetings every third Saturday of the month at 10:30 a.m. at the Occidental Community Center in downtown Occidental.
You have been listening to The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts. Today's songs include Bye Bye Montreal by Amelia Curran and If I Told You by Courtney Marie Andrews, Detroit or Buffalo by Barbara Keith, Milk and Honey by the inimitable Mandara. Actually, we didn't get that one in. Sorry about that. And Rain Roll In by Eileen Jewell. If we have a moment, I'll be sending you out with The Mouth of Flames by the Great Lakes Swimmers. Special thanks to the Blue Dot Sessions for the background loop, The Telling, from their 2017 album, Marasala. Also, a big shout out to Don Campanile for his support and helping me get on air for the very first time. He's a really solid fellow, and I appreciate him. And also, a special shout out to Ryan, the manager of the Apple Store in Santa Rosa, who, in a pinch, lent me his audio adapter so I could get on air in time. So, thank you, Ryan, and if any of you are in Santa Rosa, drop by and give them a hug for me. If you're enjoying the stories and if you want to know more, you can visit the Mountain Substack page. The link is available on the episode description on the KOWS page for the Mountain. Or you can Google The Mountain, an adoration in a multitude of parts, and it should come up. Comments and feedback are welcome. You can post on the Mountain Substack or drop an email to anadoration@gmail.com. And by all means, if you enjoyed the listen and are super intrigued, I'd be super, super grateful if you share with your friends and let them know about this really weird thing you stumbled upon out there on the airwaves in West County. I'll see you in 2 weeks. This is going to keep going. And until then, please have a wonderful day or evening wherever you are.
That I took a hold close to my body. The things that I took a hold close to my chest. The things that I took cannot leave any longer. Things that I took are the things I love best. The silent focus of a deep diving. Scars, the sweet silent joy of a deep woods commune. I left the stars, but I took the moon. I left the stars, but I took the moon. I left the stars, but I took the moon. Thank you.